Welcome to the Dead Pair Podcast. I'm your host, Jason Rambo, and with me, as always, the big man, Sean Alley. What's up, buddy?
Hey, how's everybody doing tonight?
Good. Hey, did you leave the shop door unlocked or something?
Why is that?
Who's this cat sitting over here?
I don't know. He was out there knocking, kind of looking homely and wanted a place to go.
Hey, it's Kristen Siebert. Hey, buddy.
How you guys doing?
Good. Those of you that that don't know Christian, you might recognize him. He was one of the NRA's rising stars. Congratulations on that article. That was pretty cool.
Thank you very much. Yeah, it was a good experience. First time ever being interviewed for an article.
Yeah, and you made two-time All-Region?
No, so I'm the two-time junior state champ, and then in 2019 or 2020, I was the All-Region team junior champ for the Northeast region.
Right, and you went from E to Masters in 1 year.
Correct.
That's just crazy.
Don't you just hate young eyes and reflexes?
Yeah, I don't have the words right now, so we're just going to move on.
So, Christian, you're going to school at OSU, mm-hmm. and you're majoring in finance. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Awesome.
OH. IO.
There you go.
Gee, many Christmas. Here we go with the football stuff. So, this is going to be a cool show. We've got Mike Hampton, the president of the NSCA, coming on. We've got some questions. Hopefully he doesn't get too upset with me. I'm going to put him in a hot seat here in a minute. But let's back up with you for a minute, Christian. What's your plans or your goals for shooting in 2021?
Yeah, so that's a good question. I was actually just talking with my coach, Bill Elliott, who, friend of the show, been on in the previous episode. About goals and setting goals for the coming year. And, I think the easy answer is, I want to be Ohio State champ, or I want to be Ohio State junior champ. But, he was telling me, so when you set a goal like that, you kind of set yourself up for disappointment, because like you go all year preparing for one shoot, but you never know what could happen before that shoot. You might, like Bill said, you don't sleep the night before, how important sleep is. Something could happen with your family or something where it just throws you off for that one shoot.
Oh, yeah.
So I think I'm going to try to orient my goals a little bit more, whole year or annual goal. So my goal personally is to have my my average be above an 85 this year in terms of percentage broken. So that's a good goal. And then obviously I'd love to be Ohio State champ and definitely Ohio State junior champ, but those are kind of accessory goals. And I just want to really build my pre-shot routine and make a consistent mental game strides this year.
Yeah. Well, we wish you the very best in that, accomplishing those goals this year.
Well, thank you. If I can be a critic, and I can do this because Bill and I have talked about this,
right?
You're like a light switch. The days you're on, it's like nobody can touch you. I mean, you're like maybe dropping one or two targets in a whole round. And the days you're off, an E-class guy is just walking up your back. But it's
such is sporting players.
You're right. But, that's the one thing I would say, that an outsider looking in, a guy that's shot side by side with you is you, when you're good, your good days are good and your bad days are bad, mm-hmm. But I think if you can work on that consistency a little bit, like you're talking about, and there's no better coach in the world than Bill. I mean, don't listen to anything I'm saying, but, no, I think that's the only thing you're lacking. I think you could be right there. I really mm-hmm. do.
Yeah. Well, and that's a part of this game. I mean, we've had days where we go in there, we didn't sleep well, we were up too late. Maybe had the brown bottle flu, or name an excuse. But almost every time we leave a tournament, it's like, man, I could have shot a little better, a couple right. more birds. It's just the nature of the game. But that's what pushes you, I think, competitively mm-hmm. to get better and to make your game better and to move up the ranks and hopefully exceed where you want to exceed.
Right. Yeah. Right. I think it's all about being consistent throughout the year, and you want your peak and your trial to obviously be less distance between them. You don't want your lowest score to be in the 50s and your highest score to be 99. So that's all. Right. It's all about just being consistent and being kind of even headed throughout the whole entire year. Because a whole year, there's a lot that can happen. So all about being consistent.
Yeah. And that was funny because, Sean and I just shot at, Eagle's Nest, Dan Bailey's place, last weekend. He just had a little, a fun shoot. It was a non-registered shoot, but Dan could set some targets. Mm-hmm. Oh, and yeah. Sean went the first seven stations, only would drop one target. And then he fell apart. The funny part about this is I struggled the first seven stations. And then I think I ran the last, it was a 15 station course. I think I ran the last six or seven stations and never dropped the target.
Everybody's was, different.
Right.
You know, and we ended up one target apart. But it's funny.
I beat him, by the way, just so you know, just by right. one bird, but I still beat him.
Yeah, it was score your own, so we know what happened there, okay?
Hey, no. Yeah. No, actually, our score, because we shot with Sam LaCroix. me and JD shot with Sam LaCroix, and his dad, Tim, was along. He pulled the targets. He scored. So it's as official as it's going to get. As a licensed FETASC referee, if you can't believe Tim, then you got a problem.
That's an independent third party.
There you go. It's verified. Verified that. And stamped. It's done. Right. There it is.
Exactly. Oh, gee, see, this is what I love about the sport. We beat each other up over one clay target.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
But no, Christian shot with us at the night shoot, and then I've shot – well, heck, several tournaments through 2020. I think the first time we shot together was in the fall of 19.
Yeah, fall or one of the last tournaments at Hillendale last year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but it's always a pleasure having you on the squad, and I'm glad you were able to take a few minutes out from school and stop in and talk with us.
Yeah, of course. Thank you guys for having me.
Yeah, well, you know, we had Bill on not too long ago. I got a quick question for you just to kind of follow up some of the stuff we were talking with Bill. It's wintertime here in Ohio. It's nasty. You know, obviously you're not getting out as much as you usually do. What's kind of your wintertime routine as far as practice and, you know, what kind of things do you work on in the off season before you get started for the new year?
Yeah, you know, that's a good question. I'd love to say that I'm out my gun every night at home and every weekend I get out and shoot, but you know, it's really hard with school. So
sure.
Obviously school is my number one priority at this time. So sometimes it'll be a month between shooting sessions or 2 months, even just depending on my schedule. But every time I do get to shoot, I really try to focus on the fundamentals and really make sure I'm practicing efficiently because I don't get to shoot often. Because, I mean, it's great if I could shoot 600 rounds a week or 600 targets a week and really hammer home everything I want to work on. But it's all about, like I said, just when I do get to practice, make the most out of it. And I don't just go shoot for fun. I gotta kind of put my nose to the grindstone and really grind it out.
Gotcha. Yeah, be careful there because the microphone's in front of you, the record button is lit, and Bill is listening.
Right. Oh, he knows.
Yeah.
He knows.
But, you know, it's funny because Bill asked me, like, what I was doing this week. I'm shooting another tournament this weekend at Dan's place, a FETASC, and he asked me what I'm doing to practice, and, of course, work and life and everything else is in the way. So my wife thinks I'm crazy. I've actually been suiting up full on, you know, shooting jacket, clothes, right. everything else, and practicing my FETAS mount. Because traditionally I am a high gun shooter. So I've been working on that quite a bit, and I hope Gebbins listening, trying to make him proud. My balance board came in. I've been working on that, and oh boy.
Yeah.
Wow, I've got a lot of work to do. I look like an ape with a grape. So yeah, it's, but you know what, though? I could see the benefits in that. And that's awesome. I'm glad we were able to have Gevin on and talk about some different ways of training and stuff. And that's something I would have never dreamed of.
Right.
A balance board, really, for shooting sporting clays. But I can see the benefits of it. I really can.
Yeah.
And I've been doing it every night for the last week. And
can we get any photos or videos of that?
I want to see that.
Right.
Yeah, my wife submitted something to, what is it called, AFS, America's Funniest Home Videos or whatever. Yeah, so
trying to win a little bit of money.
Yeah, but no, I'm a long ways off from mounting the gun while standing on the board. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to put a $12,000 gun in my hand while standing on that balance board. Not yet, but it's coming. And I can, like I said, I could see the benefits of it. You know, it's stuff like that that we can do in the house. It's amazing how much you can accomplish being in the house without dropping shells in the gun, what you can learn, what you can do to improve your game. And unfortunately, up here in the Northeast, that's just what we have to do.
Right. Know?
Yep.
So
yeah, you can get a lot done without having to actually go out in the elements and spend money on shooting. Like you said, doing the balance board or doing the mirror technique, like Bill had mentioned, there's a lot of stuff you could do at home.
For sure. For sure. Well, we're going to get to Mike here in just a minute. I want everybody, please don't just turn this podcast off when we're done with Mike, because we're going to be announcing the winners of the NSCA giveaway, and we have possibly a little special surprise.
Yes.
So everybody stay tuned. We're gonna wrap up here in a minute after we get done with Mike. But Sean, I think he's ready for us to call him.
Yep, let's give him a buzz.
All right, fantastic. All right. Well, we were fortunate enough to catch up with Mr. Mike Hampton. Mike, how are you doing, sir?
Very good.
How's your day going, Mike? This is Sean Alley and Jason Rambo. We've got Christian Seibert sitting in here with the Dead Pair podcast tonight. Trying to educate new shooters, and I know if you would, you're probably the best guy to talk about this. Can you tell us a little bit about the NSCA and the purpose of the organization?
Well, yes. Well, I appreciate you guys having me on. I appreciate what you guys are doing for the NSCA and the Clay Target Games. A little bit about the NSCA is it was started in the late 80s, and it was to simulate hunting. You know, everybody's got an opportunity to go out bird hunting or rabbit hunting or hunting, but to be able to train for that, sporting clays in the Clay Target Game came from the English from England. They had been doing it a lot longer than we have, and we kind of inherited that game over here. And back in the late 80s, the National Skeet Shooting Association down here in San Antonio, Texas, had an opportunity to get the game started. There was a few other organizations in the United States that were promoting sporting clays, but they were run different ways, had different philosophies and different, you know, some was run as a business, and we were wanting to run it as a nonprofit association to promote memberships and promote for our clubs an opportunity to get more shooters out shooting. Gotcha. And basically it was to simulate the hunting, and it always got the, kind of the nickname Golf with a Shotgun, and, and it's been growing ever since.
Yeah, I still use that analogy all the time. Mike, give us, before we get too deep into NSCA, can you give us a little bit of your background? I mean, tell us everything from how you got started in this to what do you like to do in your spare time? Do you still go out and bust a few birds now and then?
Yes, I do. I enjoy it. Well, I've been here for 28 years. Down here at headquarters in San Antonio, and I have grown up in the clay target world. My dad is a past world champion in trap shooting, shooting doubles. He was also the former executive director here for 15 years. I was born and raised on a trap shooting facility in Southern Illinois. My dad and mom ran that facility as a small mom and pop club with seven fields, and they sold that, and he opened up a sporting goods store in East Alton right over by Winchester Ammunition, and he was a big dealer for ammunition and firearms, and after running that for 4 or 5 years, he had an opportunity to run Gateway Gun Club over in St. Louis, Missouri, and he grew that facility, built an indoor rifle and pistol range there, and ran that for many years, and trap skeet, and at that time they just did a little fun shoots and a rifle pistol range. And along came Hal DuPont, and from DuPont K-Guns, as some of the people might know in the clay shooting world. He hired my father to come down here and become executive director, and I came down here and followed with him. After I graduated from college, he gave me 2 weeks to get down here, and been here ever since. My enjoyment is, obviously, I enjoy shooting. To be honest with you, I'm more of a recreational shooter than a competitive shooter. I'd prefer competing against my buddies than trying to win a state championship or a world championship. I'd rather beat my friends and then be able to talk about it over dinner.
Yeah, we've all been there and done that.
I also enjoy playing golf, and I've got three kids, and my kids' sports have kept me quite busy with those are some of the fun things I enjoy.
Excellent. Well, just what you said right there. Okay, so I used to be a recreational shooter. Jason used to be a recreational shooter. I assume, Christian, you were probably a recreational shooter as well. Why do you think it is that most people would want to start, you know, would want to join the NSCA, start shooting registered targets, and what kind of benefits do they get, you know, to go into this path and go down this road?
Well, I think that's the biggest thing that the NSCA, and along with the National Ski Shooting Association, both sports are for the people that, there's a lot of people that like competition, like to be competitive. It's taking it to that next level to shoot register targets. But the biggest thing and the best thing about the organization is you don't have to be competitive to be a member. You can just enjoy it. The magazine and the benefits of getting the magazine, being able to be a part of a like members club, supporting an organization that does your sport, that has created rules and a set that be able to follow by and helps the gun clubs. The association uses these funds to get new shooters involved in new shooting. So a lot of the people, there is millions of recreational shooters, but there's just under 30,000 competitive shooters. And that's, we see that in all sports. You know, you think about how many people are in the PGA compared to people that play golf. It drives itself to the NSSA and the NSCA is driven for the competitive people for their registered events. But you don't have to be the best of the best to be a member. You don't have to be the best of the best to compete. That's why we have our classes and concurrence that gives us an opportunity to get all ability levels, all age groups, whether you're a man or a woman, with our women concurrent. So the NSCA lends itself well to all levels of ability and all levels of competitiveness. And that's why we see a lot of people joining and being a part of it and having a good time.
Excellent. Kristen, do you have a question for
Mike? Yeah. So, Mr. Hampton, I know like one of the big things that's a nice thing about the NSCA is the different concurrents. So, you know, a veteran or a super veteran can compete against a 13-year-old kid or a woman who maybe is not as experienced with the sport. So could you just explain a little bit and kind of the idea behind the concurrents and how someone who's new to the sport can still win in their concurrent, but not necessarily compete against, you know, some of the masterclass shooters?
Yeah, I think that we at the NSCA have developed a class and a concurrent system to help people of all ability and all age levels. Just like you said, I mean, we have a sub-junior, we have a junior, we have ladies, we have vet, super vet, senior super vet, and a brand new one for this year for 2021 is a legacy, which is for 80 plus and older years of age. This game has got people from all ages, and the concurrents give that ability for people to compete against people of their own age. Well, let's face it, hand-eye coordination is one of the keys to clay target shooting for any type of shotgun sports is that hand-eye coordination. And when you try to compare somebody that is 20 compared to somebody that's 75, that there is a different disadvantage of what they can see, of what their reflexes are like, eyesight, and that's just how it is. That's just human nature. And we have created these concurrents to allow people to, ladies are competing against the ladies in concurrent. So whether or not you didn't do well in your class or you didn't do well overall, you have the ladies that are competing against ladies. You have everybody that's under the age of 18 competing as a sub-junior, 18 to 21 as our, 16 to 21 as our juniors. And then we have our veterans. So it helps break them down into age groups, which allows more people the opportunity to win and people to be able to compete against people of their same ability level because of their age. And like I said, it doesn't mean, I guarantee you that we've got some vets out there and some super vets that could show up to any shooter in the country and win that event because they're that good a shot. But there's also, depending on where you're at, you know, it allows that to spread out the prizes and the awards.
Right. We're all chomping at the bit here. We've got all kinds of great questions for you, but to back up just for a sec, so the new guy coming in, he's now starts off in D class. I know the year that Sean and I started competing, I believe it was 2017, we started in E, but that rule has changed, and now everybody's starting in D. Can you elaborate a little bit on what the decision was behind doing that?
Yeah, well, originally it was D class, and probably 7-8 years back we moved it to E, and we found out what was happening is when we started everybody off in E class, some areas of the country do not have the volume of shooters that come and attend events in enough classes. So we were having people that would get stuck in some classes due to the amount of participation. And there is definitely a new shooter that we also followed along with the scores and looking at the scores and saw that there's a lot of people that shoot recreationally and have for 10 years and then all of a sudden join the NSCA. There's also people that have just started shooting that year and joined the NSCA. Well, that guy that's been shooting for 10 years has got an ability level normally better than the guy that's brand new, that's never really done it before. And they're both brand new shooters. They're both new members.
Right.
So what we found out that is when we put them into E, a lot of people got kind of stuck in there. People won their way out. But it allowed us, by if we went back to putting them in D, after shooting 300 targets, you can petition the NSCA to review you, and we can move you down to E class.
Gotcha.
So it helped spread out some of those members that couldn't win their way out to be able to drop back down and be able to compete against people of their own ability level.
You know,
those E-class shooters are true novices, where a lot of the people that are new members go into D, and if they're good shots that just now decide to become a member, they move up to C class pretty quickly.
Right.
And it helps spread out that lower class is the reason why that was done. And like I said, we used to have it as D. We went to E, found out some of the flaws with that, and then we went back to D.
I always wondered that. That makes perfect sense why you guys made that decision.
Yeah, and to back up even further, so for people, again, that are new to the sport or just coming into shooting registered targets, you know, obviously there is a class system. So we talked about the concurrence and where you can shoot with, you know, the same age people or the same group of people, women, older people, younger people. So with the regular classes, you start, the E is the beginner's level, and then it goes alphabetically all the way up to A, then double A, then masters. So for a new shooter, what does the classes mean? I know you have punches you have to earn for different shoots. Can you elaborate a little bit on that and how a shooter would actually progress and move up through the ranks through the NSCA class system?
Yeah, the NSCA, you know, we're housed together with the National Skeet Shooting Association. The NSSA classification system is based on an average. And you can shoot really, really well and move up in class because your average increased, but you never beat anybody. So one of the things the NSCA reviewed, and due to the fact that skeet and trap is a standardized sport, the targets are thrown at the same speed, the same distance, the same height, no matter where you are at in the country. Sporting clays is kind of goes back to like we talked about golf with a shotgun, due to the fact that every course, every station is different. And every gun club can continue to change their courses all the time. It's not like you go to this, play this nine holes, and hole three is a par three, 200 yards. Well, guess what? As you go to this club and station two is throwing a rabbit target this week and throwing two incomers next week.
Right.
They can change it around. They can make it as easy and as hard as they want to. So the average system did not work for the NSCA. So it went to a punch system where you have to win or score high enough and place in your class to get punches. And it allowed people to move up in class based on being able to win their class or compete at a high level in their class to move up, and not just because of an average.
Right.
And the punch system is, as you work your way up from E to D, you need four punches. From D to C, you need six. And it just progresses as you get higher, the more punches you need to move up. You can also request to be raised up in class. If you feel that you're in a class that you feel that you are better than what that is, or you're in an area that we periodically will get where guys will live in certain parts of the country where guys and gals, there's not a lot of C class shooters. So they go to events after events after events, and there's nobody hardly there in C. Well, they can never get enough punches to move up to B, so they can request to move up in class. The only class you cannot request to enter is master class.
Gotcha.
Master class is you have to achieve that honor. That is, you have got to win at least 20 punches in a year, or in 2 years, because we carry over punches from year to year, but you only can carry them over for 1 year. But the punch system just allowed people to be able to move up in class on winning or being very competitive. We review that every year. At the end of the year, there's a classification review where we review everybody's shooting credentials and see where they fell, rank in class, how many punches they had, how many targets they shot. And we will move people down accordingly to make sure that they continuously stay competitive and the classes stay competitive. We don't want somebody in a class that they cannot compete in, but we also don't want to have people that are in a class that they continuously winning and don't move out. We just kind of keep a watch on that to make sure that everybody gets to be in the proper class based on their ability level.
Gotcha.
Yeah, so I know one of the things that a new shooter faces a lot of times, and I certainly face it as a new shooter during registration, was the options. Because I'd always be asked, I'd confirm my class, and then I'd be asked what options to play. So can you elaborate a little bit for a new shooter on, like, say, a class option, the Lewis class, and then even, like, on some of the bigger shoots, we have a back-to-class option. Could you just elaborate on these a little bit?
Yeah, basically, like anything, there's the money aspect of this. If somebody wants to win some money, they'll play options. The options are, let's take a class option. There may be as a $10 class option. So when you enter in this event, you pay an extra $10 and you're in B class. Well, you are going to compete against all the people in B class that played that option. So if you won, they might be paying out, depending on how many shooters, how many groups they're going to do, they might pay out two places, and they might do it 60-40, where 60% of all that money goes to the champion and 40% goes to the runner-up. Options are just a way to allow some of the people that that are more competitive, they like the idea of potentially winning some money, to go ahead and compete. Those are basically, it's like a side bet at the event that's run by the club, where 100% of the money that's paid in options are paid out by the club. There's nothing kept back. So if there's $100 worth of option money in there, the club pays out $100.
Gotcha, and you're not forced to do it.
None of it's kept back.
It's basically selective. So if you want to play the options, you can, but you're not forced to, obviously.
That's exactly right. And that's the biggest thing with the option is it's optional. That's why it's called options. You know, for some of the people like to just go and shoot and have fun, that they just pay the entry fee to sign up and they go shoot, have a good time. If they win an award, great. If they don't, that's fine too, but they had fun with it. Some people like to put a little money on it to make it a little bit more exciting. You know, it's no different than the side bets that some of us have when we get in the golf cart and we go shoot with our own buddies. Okay, everybody throw in $5, high man wins. You know, but this is done on the shoot level where everybody's doing that. But it's only for the people that want to. And the biggest thing is your class and concurrent options is the only people you're competing against are people that are in your class or in your concurrent.
Gotcha.
So you're not having a guy that's in master class competing against you that's in B class in your class option. That's not how that works. It's only B shooters or only A shooters or it's only double A's.
Gotcha. Well, Mike, okay, along that same line of questioning, I've been shooting for over 3 years now, and here's another thing that I'm still not clear on. Describe to me, what are the All-American team points and what do they mean for shooters? Because I still to this day don't really have a clear picture on what all that means and what those points mean to me or as a shooter.
NSCA has a lot of recognition programs. Our recognition programs, we have an All-American team. We have a 12-gauge All-American team. We have a FITASC All-American team. We have sub-gauge All-American teams. We have sponsors that are Krieghoffs and Briley's and Blausers and Cole Gunsmith and DuPont K-Guns. They're a lot of our sponsors for these recognition programs that ways to help. Somebody wants to see how well they did. You know, it's like, did you make the All-American team? Well, we have All-American teams that are from all the concurrents, and we have an open All-American team. So we'll have a ladies All-American team, a sub-junior, junior, all those concurrents that we talked about, plus an open one, which is the overall. But when you go to an event, based on how you shoot, if you win the event, and there is the events for All-American points are broken down in two categories. There's from 50 and below, number of total entries into the shoot, and then there's one for that and above. And those gives you basically is factor points on top of it. So if you go to a shoot and let's say you win the shoot, well, and there's 100 people at the shoot, you're going to win X points times however many people are at the shoot gives you your All-American points. We have a points race that's updated on a bi-weekly, it's bi-monthly, twice a month, that they are updated on our website to where you can see how you're competing against everybody else, whether it's in your concurrent or in open. And you accumulate points all year long. And what you will, what we have seen people do is they'll be, we, how our All-American teams work is we have a first team, which is the top 10. We have a second team, which is 11 through 20. And we have a third team, which is 21 through 30. And people are watching the points race to see how can I get into the top 30. Or if I'm on a borderline between the second and third team, how many points does he have, but how many points do I have? So people can use that. But we also have them where they're done in classes. We have a we have the classes, but we also have by state, where we'll right. recognize the top five shooters in the state and the top concurrents in the state and the top class winners in the state. So there's many different recognition programs where we try to let people that are on that competitive side that like to see how they do, want to see how many points they can accumulate, and then go to different shoots. So the bigger the shoot you go to, the more points you have an opportunity of winning. And, you know, the national championship, which is held here in San Antonio annually at the end of October, is the biggest one. We'll have almost 2,000 competitors in the main event. And those will have the biggest points. Then it goes down to our U.S. Open, then our regionals, then our state shoots. But every shoot has opportunity to win All-American points, whether it's your small local shoot all the way up to the national championship.
Right.
And people accumulate those points. So like our state shoot, our state teams, those are, we look at how many state points you got for shooting within your state. So if you're not competing in your state, for the guy that says, you know what, I'm never going to be the top of the top. I'm never going to be a world championship or a national championship, which is great. There's not very many of them that's going to happen that way. But I want to compete in my local state. I want to see, can I be the top veteran? Can I be the top sub junior? Can I make the open team in my state? Those are opportunities that the All-American point system gives you.
Gotcha.
Well, Mike, that leads into my next question. Are you ready for this, Mike? I'm about to put you in the hot seat here.
All righty.
One of the biggest topics of discussion amongst competitors is master's class. I know that Sean and I have a couple of friends that recently made master's class, and on a local level, they are. They're that good. The problem is they like going to regionals and they like going to the nationals, and they feel that going up against, you know, Zach Keenbaum or Derek Mine is just, they're just donating money at that point. There's been a lot of talk about pro classes and lots of other great ideas that would make competition a little bit more fair as a competitor reaches the top. Is this something that the NSCA is looking into? And if so, is there anything you can tell us about a possible direction that we might be headed with that?
Yes, this is, I would tell you that that's probably been going on for the last 10 years, 12 years, this same conversation about masterclass. As I said earlier, masterclass is, you can't declare up in a masterclass. You can only earn your way in a masterclass. I will tell you that at the end of the year, we have classification review, and we reduce the masterclass every year. A huge portion of them are dropped down to AA. Like the double A shooters will drop down into A and so on and so forth. But we will also see that there is a lot of people that will refuse to be dropped down out of masterclass. Even though they're not competitive, they will retain there because they felt like that was an accomplishment that they made, that they are proud of, that they want to continue to be a part of that. But you know what? You'll never hear those people complaining about people shouldn't be in masterclass and that I'm not competitive.
Right.
Gotcha.
What I do hear is the people that say, I can't compete against Anthony or Zach or right. Derek or Gebbin, Corey, the likes of those individuals that are dominant. Whenever they show up, they've got a great chance of winning. The problem is, how do you decide to draw the line? Where do you draw the line?
Right.
And over the years, we've talked many times. We've had feedback where people said, well, anybody that gets sponsored should be in a pro class. Well, I know guys that are sponsored that don't get anything, but they get hats and shirts because they like that gun or they like that ammo, and right. they like to feel that they're being sponsored by that company. And but they're not that caliber. So that takes that away. You know, we talked about at a certain amount of punches, if you exceeded this many punches, you're moved out. Or you make an All-American team, open All-American team, you move out. But sometimes those are one. Sometimes what do you do when you make the third team? Or what happens when somebody takes a year off and then they don't shoot and they come back? As some of the people listening might know, Gebbin Miles. Gebbin Miles is a world champion. Anytime he goes anywhere in the world to compete, he's got a chance of winning. Well, he took off a year. He was gone. He took off a year of sport. So he wouldn't make some of these teams moving up for this year. But anytime, if you have a pro class, he would be one that you'd have to have in there. And right. it's always been difficult to, how do you decide who goes? And also when you take, what you talked about earlier was some guys in their home state, they are masterclass shooters without a doubt because they're dominant within their state or within their club area. But when they go to the open or regional or the nationals, they can't compete. One thing that we have talked about and we are looking at and we want to try to figure out is maybe we have a pro class at the U.S. Open, the regionals, the nationals, the very large events, to be able to spread those out. Now, I will tell you that if you talk to some of the top shooters, some of them are concerned about that because if they are there and they're sponsoring, they're looking for some points or they're looking for to win their class and that kind of stuff because they might not be champion, but you take them out of their class when they play class options, now you've taken money out of their pocket,
right.
potentially.
Right.
And because there's not going to be, instead of there being at this shoot that there is 100 masterclass shooters, now there's 60 masterclass shooters and 40 pros. Well, now everything is being cut down. It does also put a burden on the club because now the club's got to come up with more awards and more prizes. That is above and beyond.
Right.
And so some of these things have been what has slowed this down to be able to figure this out. Unfortunately, we are not the PGA or bass fishing where we've got enough industry sponsors that and outside the industry sponsors that have deep pockets to be able to underwrite those programs to be able to put that money in there. To help offset that. But, you know, that's still a goal. I would love to figure out a way to make that work. I know our boards would love to have a way to get that figured out because this is always one of our questions.
Well, that was
one of the biggest questions
right.
that we get asked yearly.
That was one of the things, you know, you were going back to prize money and stuff like that. We had discussed on our show previously is, you know, like a big title sponsor. You know, if you look at NASCAR, they got Monster Energy and on and on and on. Without beating up the energy drink companies, but somebody big like that that could sponsor the whole series, you know, like the U.S. Open, the regionals, and the national, that would definitely open up the door to more possibilities for these types of changes. Am I correct in saying that?
Oh, without a doubt. And with that is the problem we have that we've got to overcome is the amount of people being exposed to it. If you get on TV, you open up other doors. Problem is getting on TV, you know, NASCAR, you know, I mean, look at what they've done with bass fishing on TV and that kind of stuff. You know, but they've also got cameras everywhere, and it's a huge underwriting expense to make those things happen. And it's been tried a few times with the shooting on the TV of our game. You know, technology is continuing to get better to be able to capture that. That's something we never, ever want to give up on. We just have to figure out how to make it work, what will make it work, because to get that outside the industry, the Monster Energy, the drink companies, the big car companies, insurance companies, you know, the guys with the deep pockets, it takes, you got to give them enough exposure. You got to get them on TV. You got to get them to where they're going to get all these millions of recreational people to see them. That will help. That changes the game. That will help underwrite it. We have tried multiple times within the association that were pro tour, pro am tours, pro clays, the PSCA, being a part of all kinds of these different things. And unfortunately, nothing has clicked enough yet to get us that over that hump, but it's not going to be, we're not going to stop trying. But I do think even without that, we still have to figure out this classification of the pro, the master class shooters, where, how we do that, how can we make that work, how can we make that function. And because, you know, it's not really an issue at most state shoots. It's definitely not an issue at all the smaller shoots. It really only comes into play at our regionals, the U.S. Open, the national championship. Right. Because, you know, when you start talking about the New Mexico state shoot, the masterclass shooters that are there need to be masterclass shooters, because some of those guys are going to tell you that I don't want them going down to AA. You know, they're too good. They're going to win because those guys are in that state, in that area. They're the best that there's the best of the best. It just changes when we start going into the national level and bringing in those other 20 or 30 guys, 40 guys, depending on how many you look at, that can win and will win most of the time. Right. And you take out those 40 guys, I guarantee you, if I put the top 40 guys, they will tell you that top 25% are the ones that they say, I can't compete against that guy. That's all he does.
Right.
You know, he makes a living doing this. And I will tell you, he doesn't make a living at the shooting part.
Yeah.
He makes a living through his sponsorships and his instructor schools to make it done. Because the money in the game is not there to make a living.
No.
Right. Well, Mike, something you said earlier, you know, when we formed the Dead Pair podcast, one of our goals was to try to bring information to new shooters, try to attract new shooters into sporting clays. And, you know, obviously we see a lot of influx of youth shooters and women shooters into the sport now. And we see a lot more of that than we used to. But, you know, as far as attracting new shooters to the sport, it seems to be kind of relegated to people or family or friends that are already shooting. And that's kind of what is bringing in new shooters into sporting clays. In your opinion, what are some of the other things we could do to try to get the message out? I mean, I think sporting clays is a fantastic thing to do. We really enjoy it. Jason and I both, for the last 3 or 4 years we've been doing it. We love it. And that's why we're doing this. So if we need to get the message out to people that really aren't familiar with shooting, in your mind, what is some of the best avenues to go through? What are some of the best other options we might have to try to bring this message to people that aren't familiar already with the sport?
Well, I think our biggest opportunity in the shooting sports is the continual growth of the corporate and charity events. People will support causes. The National Shooting Complex here, which is headquarters for the NSCA, we have 33 to 35 events a year that are charity events and corporate events. These are shooters that want to support a cause. whether it's Kids and Clays, cancer therapy, the police department, the Air Conditioning Association for scholarships, the rodeo, whatever that cause is, that brings people to support. They do that for golf, that they're not necessarily great golfers or somebody that just will hack around at golf. It does it for a variety of different things to get people involved and get people engaged on a level that they think, well, get them out there. After you get them out there to the club, if the club or members at that club can grasp some of those shooters and make sure that they have a good time, they're having a safe, fun, enjoyable time, and show them what it's like to shoot this game, they're hooked. All they got to do is just be shown.
Yep.
And give them a reason to get to the club, and once they're at the club, the games will sell itself.
Absolutely.
All they got to be done is treated right and get people to show them how to have a good time.
I agree totally.
The biggest thing that we will run people off at clubs is the targets are set for the masterclass shooters and the best shooters trying to prepare for a tournament. They need to have a few stations at that club to prepare them. But a majority of them needs to be targets where people can hit and have fun.
Right.
The game will only grow if people can have fun and enjoy themselves.
Yeah.
Corporate events and charity events have hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of people at them at each of these clubs. And people are having a good time. They're enjoying themselves.
Right.
And those are the people that we can get into our game.
I agree with the targets. There definitely needs to be a variety at all times.
Right. And I know another thing along the lines of new shooters and some new exciting things that are happening to this sport is I know Mark Balthazar just started the new American Field Sporting, and that's supposed to kind of make a fun twist on Feat Task and kind of incorporate sporting and five stand all together into a fun new game. Now, do you see this kind of event ever coming to a stage like Nationals where it has so many shooters coming and can expose them all to this new sport?
Without a doubt, Mark's American Field Sporting is great. Those are the type of continuous growth of new innovations and new disciplines or new types of things that has helped the NSCA grow to what it is today. When NSCA first got started, it was sporting. Then it added a five stand. Then it added Feat Task, which was really, Feat Task is really it's parcours de chasse. Is what we shoot. Feat Task is the organization, the French organization. But then we added sub gauges. Then we've got pump gun and side by side. Then more recently, we've added super sporting. So each one of these things has helped get more people out shooting, get more people shooting more targets at the event. It's helped the clubs grow and prosper. It's allowed the shooters to have a great time. Because people aren't going to come to a state shoot that's only going to throw a 200 bird main event.
Right.
Sporting. They want to shoot some other stuff. I want to shoot the five stand. I want to shoot Feat Task. I want to shoot the sub gauge course. I want to shoot super sporting. I want to shoot American Field Sporting. And that's what it'll eventually come down to. Is excellent. All of these new innovations and new ideas help keeping and adding new. Sparks to the game, which keeps adding new excitement and not sticking with the same stagnant thing that over and over and over. And that's what sporting is so good about is the newness of it, the changes in it. That's why every club needs to make sure they're always changing up their courses and changing it around.
Absolutely.
So people are shooting in new areas and seeing new things and seeing new targets. And some clubs don't have the ability to change and expand the area, but they do have the ability to change the targets and throw different targets and show variety to their members. That's what will keep people coming out and shooting. And, the biggest thing is, getting these recreational shooters to events is they got to come out and have a good time at that corporate event and charity event. They got to come out and practice at the club and feel comfortable about what they're doing. But they also need somebody to say, hey, come out and shoot with me. Come out and shoot this tournament with me and show them what it is and that kind of stuff and have a good time with it. You know, what we don't want to do is try to turn everybody into an All-American right off the bat.
Right.
Like I said, there's a lot of people that don't have any desire to be an All-American. They don't care one iota about being a world champion. They want to go out and shoot and have fun and beat the guy sitting next to them in the golf cart.
Absolutely. Yep.
And the NSCA is all about that. You know, we hope everybody comes to the national championship, but we know they're not, or the U.S. Open or the regionals, but that's okay. Stay and shoot it in your local area. Stay and shoot it in your local club, but go out and shoot and have fun and participate and be a member of the NSCA.
You know, that's well said. And, you know, here at the Dead Pair, we absolutely love our sport. That's why we're doing this. And that's also why we collaborated with Breakpoint Shooting Instruction, Chad Roberts. We're actually giving away two NSCA memberships tonight here on the show. We're going to draw two names. We've got quite a few entries in, and we're going to go ahead and let Christian pick a couple names out.
Well, hey, guys, real quick, sorry to interrupt you.
Yeah.
I'm going to match your two entries, and I'm going to give you two additional ones.
Oh, my gosh.
Hey, wow. All right.
Wow, we're going to make four people happy tonight instead of two. That's Mike, thank you very much.
Yeah, thank
appreciate
you, Mike.
That.
No
yeah.
problem. And, guys, the ones I'm going to give you are going to be a three-year membership.
Oh, wow. My goodness. Wow.
That's pretty cool.
That's
yeah.
awesome.
Yeah. Well, that's – wow. We're really going to have to shake the box up on that list of names.
Yeah. It makes somebody really happy.
Wow. Mike, that's – you know what? We really appreciate that. Can you elaborate a little bit if you've got an idea or something? What else can we do? I mean, Sean and I are just a couple of idiots that like to run our gums behind a microphone, and we pretend to know how to shoot really well, but can you – can you give us another idea? Is there something else we can do to help draw in new shooters to a sport we love?
Keeping it in fresh, keeping it out in front of everybody, reminding everybody that it's not just about winning. It's about having fun and shooting. You're being with like-minded people. That's why people are a part of the NSCA. They want to be with people that have the same type of value about the Second Amendment, about yep. shooting, about guns, and they want to have a good time doing it. It's something different. You know, it's a game for all ages, and you guys talking about it and showing and telling everybody about the fun of it, you know, yep, there is going to be a small percentage of people that want to get out there and grind and win a title. But there's a lot of people want to just go out there and have a great time and get away from the troubles of the job or what's going on or politics. They want to go out and have fun. And this is what the NSCA is doing and what you guys are talking about. And the more you can talk about it and show them how fun it is and talk about the variety of all the good people around the country that are doing it and all the good clubs, that's all we can ask for.
Yeah, you really hit the nail on the head there, because I think that's why we've built the friendships and the relationships that we have with people that we've met in shooting, is we all are like-minded. And like you said, we believe in the Second Amendment. We want to go out and have fun and forget about all the worries and stresses of life and career and, you know, family even sometimes. And I think you really hit it on the head there. That's one thing that the NSCA and competing together does, is we form such a camaraderie amongst people. You know, Christian's somebody that we met through shooting. And, you know, here he is. He's sitting in studio doing a podcast with us. That's a good way to look at it. And that's something I think we need to push for a little bit more, instead of, oh, my gosh, they're shooting guns.
Yeah, and I can honestly say that, you know, Jason and I were weekend warriors. We go out and have fun with our buddies, just like you said. And it was 2017, Jake Spangler, the director over at the Cardinal Center, came to us with, I think that year you guys were giving away some free memberships to the NSCA for new shooters. And Jason approached me about, you know, hey, let's try this out. And I'm like, oh gosh, I don't know about that. But you know what? Once we did it, we were completely hooked. I mean, after our first tournament, we realized we had a lot of work to do. But at the same time, we've been growing and grinding through the sport, met a lot of great people, had a lot of fun. Just, I mean, it's something we look forward to year after year. And I can see me and him and all of our friends doing it for years and years to come.
Oh, yeah.
And we enjoy it so much. I can't say enough about it.
Good. Well, guys, like I said, I appreciate everything that you're doing. And just to remind all your listeners to go out to the mynsca.com and got all of our information on it to get started and join and belong and have a good time.
Excellent. Well, Mike, thank you so much for joining us. We appreciate all of your information. It's been instrumental. Hopefully this will help any new shooters that are considering getting into shooting registered targets, help them join the NSCA, help find out what all this is about. And any other final thoughts or closing thoughts about the NSCA or anything we've talked about tonight?
No, but just thank you again. Like I said, it's the start of a new year, and hopefully a start of a good year for everybody to go out and bang away at some of these gun clubs and have a good time shooting sporting clays.
There you go.
Absolutely. And Mike, I'm hoping to see you this year. I hope I can make it down to the Nationals this year. But if you ever get up to Ohio, you got a free round on Sean and I. We'll take you to either Cardinal or Eagle's Nest, and we'll go bust some birds.
Absolutely.
Wonderful. Sounds good, guys. Thank you again.
All right.
Thanks, sir.
Thank you, Mike. Have a wonderful evening.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Wow, Sean, unbelievable. Can you, Mike is, well, first of all, not only is he a plethora of information, but really two more memberships?
Yeah, that was nice of him. I mean, he is the president of the NSCA, so
yeah,
we heard it from the horse's mouth directly.
Right. I mean, and you know, I probably had a couple more questions I wanted to ask him, but the man's very busy. I don't want to keep him too long.
Yeah, so. Absolutely. We probably could have gone on all night, honestly.
Yeah, and we'll catch back up with him.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So. And that was very generous of him to donate the extra two 3-year memberships to our raffle tonight.
Very much so. One of the things we didn't want to bother Mike with, but I think that needs to be talked about, is etiquette on the course. Mm-hmm. This really doesn't come up much, but it seems to be an ongoing problem everywhere we go. And guys, what we're talking about, guys and gals, excuse me, what we're talking about is when a shooter's in the box, let's not be carrying on and having a conversation behind him or being loud. It's kind of like a, if you can imagine a PGA tour.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. You
know, and when a guy's putting for $1 million, okay, we're not shooting for $1 million, but let's be courteous.
Yeah. And we're not trying to gripe or anything. We're just trying to make sure that everybody's kind of aware that there is a protocol. There is a courtesy when you're shooting in a tournament to make sure that you're allowing the other people to compete without interruptions and without distractions.
Yeah. And I would say one of the other things too is the beloved golf cart. Seems like, and I was guilty of it one time. We were shooting the night shoot and I pulled up, you know, I was the first shooter up. So as soon as I got done shooting the previous station, I hurried up and got down there, and they had golf carts parked everywhere. I had nowhere else to park, and I parked in the middle of the cart path, got out, and I'm watching people shoot, and as they're getting done, apparently somebody was cutting through the course, and they got pretty upset with me, and, you know, I apologize, but ordinarily, when I pull up to a station, I make sure and get off the side of the cart path.
Right.
We don't want to pull out in the yard and create ruts for the, you know, the club to have to fix, but at the same time, don't park in the middle of the car path.
Yeah, and in some clubs, it's really tight. Like, for instance, I know when we shot C4, their path is very tight. There's not a lot of room to begin with. So right. You really need to do your part to get your cart or buggy off to the side. Make sure that you're not blocking anybody. And then you never know when somebody's trying to rush back. I mean, there's guys that shoot station 15, and they got to run all the way back to station 1. So they're running the whole length of the cart path. You want to make sure that that's left open and that people can travel back and forth easily. Mm. I think another thing that I see a lot of that gets me irritated at times, you know, keeping the grounds clean. You guys that shoot the autos, I know it's a little bit of an advantage for us guys that shoot over-unders because we're able to just pull the guns out of the barrels, throw them in the trash can.
You mean the shells.
The shells, sorry. The spent shells, sorry. Yeah, what am I saying? So anyways, the point I'm trying to make is that I know the autos fling the shells, but, you know, when you have 100, 150 guys at a big tournament and they're all, you know, say 25% of them are shooting autos, flinging all kinds of brass and spent shells everywhere. So make sure you pick up your mess after you're done. It's just, and even when you practice, make sure you pick up your shells. Mm-hmm. I mean, the club can clean it up for you. It's just a courtesy thing.
Right. Kristen, is there anything you've seen that is irritating or maybe a little bit of out of ethics?
Yeah, you know, I think it's a kind of personal preference. I know I was at a state shoot. I think it was probably the 2019 Ohio State shoot. And there was an older gentleman shooting in front of me. And he came over to me and told me that the golf cart behind me was the rudest thing he's ever had because someone left their cart running while he was in the stand. And so I think a lot of times people kind of almost focus too much on what's going on around them when they should be focused on the target. And I completely understand if a golf cart or a Polaris comes whipping by, it can be a little bit distracting, but sometimes I think people put too much attention on the things going outside around, and then you get a little flustered in the box, and then you start thinking, oh man, that guy's talking about, you know, what he had for lunch behind me. And that's all I can think about now. So I guess you got to kind of police yourself when it comes to it and try to be respectful for other people that are in the box. But,
right,
you know, if you are in the box and something does happen, you kind of just have to let it go and not let it get to you.
Well, and I've noticed that too is, you know, a lot of people are, they call them HVAC cabs. Basically, it's heat and air conditioning, full enclosed cabs. And some of these, I call them buggies. They're side-by-sides. And they want to leave them running because it's either cold outside and they got the heater going, or it's hot outside and they got the air conditioner going. There's nothing wrong with that. But if your side-by-side buggy, whatever you want to call it, is annoyingly loud,
right,
park the daggone thing down the cart path a little bit. I mean, let's be respectful. I mean, okay, great. You've got an HVAC cab. Park it 30, 40 feet farther down the course and not bother the guy that's shooting. What if he was bothering you?
Right. Yeah. And I've got one more here. So, and this is typically the new shooters are guilty of this. So I've seen it dozens of times, and I know you all have as well. You've got a squad up in front of you, and they're shooting the station that you're getting ready to come up on, and one or two of the guys is like right up behind the shooter and watching him shoot in the box. It's like, you can't do that because there could be another shooter waiting behind him, and he's waiting his turn to get in the box. You know, everybody wants to see the targets, and everybody wants to try to figure out how to, you know, break them. But give the guys that are in the box room to breathe. Don't trip on top of them. Don't make them feel claustrophobic. You can stand off to the side, and that's good form. But don't crowd them.
And that goes back, you know, what I was saying earlier about I was the last shooter. Excuse me. I was the first shooter coming up, right? So I went down and got to the next station really quick so I could see the extra birds. There's nothing wrong with that. There's nothing in the rules that says you can't do that. However, like you said, don't get up there in the box right behind, you know, there's people trying to shoot.
5 feet from behind the guy that's trying to shoot. Don't do that.
And I actually, when I do that, I try to be very polite. I make sure if I'm coming up on the station, I see somebody shooting, I'll actually stop. I mean, I've stopped and sat back 100 feet.
Oh, yeah.
Let them shoot. Now, when they put their gun down to reload, then I'll go ahead and get the buggy up there, shut it off, get out of the buggy very quietly, and stand off to the side, out of the way, not amongst their squad, and watch the targets. There's too many people that want to come up and, like you said, crowd the squad that's shooting, and it's like, look, back off, man.
Yeah.
You're going to get to see plenty of targets, you know.
And one last thing, I'll say this, and that'll be my last beef for this discussion. Make sure you take with you what you need to shoot. I've seen too many guys go up there. They get in the box. Oh, I need to change my chokes. Oh, I forgot to grab this kind of shell or whatever. Take it with you, because if on a big tournament where you got 100, 200 guys, I mean, every minute you waste, it's backing everybody else up behind them. So, you know, be courteous, bring what you need into the box. Don't waste time. I mean, nobody's trying to rush you, but don't, you know, do things that deliberately stall everybody else behind you.
Right. I mean, especially, you know, if you're a guy, no names mentioned, Mr. Radulovich, that takes forever on a pre-shot routine or wherever, and then you're going to get up there and see the show pair and go, oh, I need to change chokes, and then set your gun down and walk back to the buggy and fumble around. Come on, man.
Right.
You know, let's be courteous. Let's have some common sense. But
you're going to get a phone call. You know that, right?
Yeah. And, you know, one of the things I started being, like, more cognizant of is, like, where you stand when you're waiting to shoot, like, especially outside of a box. I noticed that, like, a lot of people kind of just expect a right-handed shooter, so they will, you know, crowd on his, like, visible eye or non-shooting side. But when a left-hander comes up, a lot of times they can see you in your peripheral vision.
Right.
So, like, you kind of always got to make sure that you're not, you know, creeping up or trying to get an advantage of the next station by looking at their targets. Sometimes you can be in a shooter's peripheral and really be a distraction. So that's another thing, especially with winding courses, is if you're off at the next station, you can really be a distraction to the people behind you shooting. So you just kind of got to be cognizant of where you're standing.
Yeah, it's funny you say that, because I had that happen. I was at a shoot. I'm not going to say anywhere, but I was at a shoot and I kept seeing a flash out of my left eye. I'm like, what in the heck is this? Well, what it was is the guy was putting his hand out there like you would for a showboat. Oh, to
follow the bird,
right? Yeah. And he was standing almost completely perpendicular to me. And it was every time that bird was coming from right to left, he had his hand out there. Yeah, I'm seeing his hand.
That's
like,
not good.
Dude, come on, man. Back up 10 feet.
You always got to be careful where your hands are. Yeah, you're following. You're not trying to do any harm, but it just, you can catch it right at the end, and that's all it takes is to take your eye off the bird, and sure enough, you missed it.
All right. Well, I think we've sounded like a bunch of grumpy old guys about for as long as it needs to be, so I think we've got that covered.
Yeah.
Point's been made.
I don't want to beat it up. I just think that etiquette on a course is going to make it more enjoyable for everybody.
Yeah, and people will look at you differently when you're doing stuff right, too, so that's a good thing.
For sure.
So we're going to move right on to this contest now. Finally, a long-awaited drawing.
Yeah, we've got two more. Additional, we need to draw. So I tell you what, let's do this first. Let's draw the two
For Chad Roberts.
For Chad Roberts, Breakpoint Shooting Instruction. Thank you very much, Chad.
Yep.
Let's draw those first. We've got two names we've got to draw, and then we're going to go to the two that Mike Hampton was so gracious to give us.
And Chad's were one-year memberships.
One-year full-blown membership.
Along with a swag pack of stuff from Breakpoint Shooting.
Right, and that's the printed magazine, not the digital one.
And then Mike gave us 2 3-year memberships. That was
unbelievable.
Crazy generous.
Chad probably just threw his phone like, what the heck, man? You know? So, but okay, Christian, you ready?
I'm ready. Let me get
shuffle through all those. We had quite a few entries, so it's good. Just dig through the pile and just randomly pick out, you know, whoever you feel is all ready to go.
All right.
Let me grab one. All right. I got one right here. All right. We have David R. Cohen. That is our first winner.
All right.
Yeah, so it looks like he's saying here that he's a new shooter and he's hungry to learn. So, David, I'm sure you could use the NSCA membership to.
And whereabouts is David from?
Let's see. David is from Cleveland, Ohio.
Oh, nice. Hey, a local Buckeye guy. There you go. All right. And no, this is not rigged.
Right.
This is not rigged at all.
Cooking.
All right.
You got to pick one more.
Let me get one more here. All right. We have a Mr. Ben Mahn, M-A-H-N. Ben, let's see.
Where's he from?
Ben is from Atlanta, Georgia, or near Atlanta, Georgia.
Nice. Congratulations, Ben.
Congratulations.
Yes. Did he say anything nice about us?
Let's see. He said he's looking forward to attending his first shoot next year, so hopefully the membership can get him well on his way.
Nice. Oh, good.
Perfect.
Good deal.
Perfect.
Okay, so you two gentlemen, what we're going to do, we are going to contact Chad Roberts. We're going to give him your name and information, and he is going to reach out to you directly. And then he's going to get you hooked up with your membership and your swag pack. And so be looking for a phone call from Chad Roberts, and that's going to be coming out of California. So
nice. Congratulations, guys.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, now on to the big ones, the 3-year memberships. 2 giveaways for 3-year memberships directly from the NSCA and Mike Hampton.
All right, let me reach in here. All right, we have a Darren Hedman. Darren, let's see. I think he's from the Chicago area because he said he just joined Northbrook.
Okay.
So he looks like he's been shooting for about 6 months and is really getting into it. So Darren, that'll work out nicely.
All right. And did he say anything nice about the podcast or what he liked or didn't like?
Let me see here. Yeah, he just said you guys are doing an awesome job and really answering some good questions he might have, it looks like.
Oh, good. Well, thanks, Darren.
Thank you.
All right. Let's see. Last one here. We have Nick Hillner. Nick, let's see. Where are you from? I'm not seeing a location.
All right. Well, we'll have to reach out to Nick on his email and figure out where he's from.
Yeah, but he's saying you guys are doing a great job, and he's primarily a pistol shooter, and I know you guys referred to shotguns as the dark side, so he is making a transition to the dark side, and yeah, should be great for you.
Well, awesome. Well, congratulations to all those winners. I mean, hopefully these memberships will come in rather handy for them in the 2021 season.
Absolutely. Well, we've got some more cool contests coming up, but I'm not going to spoil anything just yet.
No, got a lot of stuff in the works, so you guys got to stay tuned and listen.
Yes, and it's going to be a little bit more value, but you're going to have to put some coin in the game.
Some skin in the game.
Yeah, but it'll be worth it.
Yeah, absolutely. But, hey, listen, everybody, please like us on Facebook and Instagram, and don't be afraid to share the episodes. We really appreciate that. We now have a YouTube channel, so please like and subscribe to our YouTube channel. We're going to be doing some live video podcast and some recorded video podcast. That's coming up here soon, but you know, baby steps. Got to crawl before you walk, as they say.
Absolutely. Well, so, anything else, you guys, or did we do enough?
I think we've covered some pretty good ground tonight, really. You know, Mike being on, thank you, Mike Hampton.
Yeah, thanks, Mike,
for joining us and for the two memberships. I mean, how gracious of him. So
absolutely.
Christian, thank you for coming and sitting in with us.
Of course. Appreciate thank you guys for having me.
Yeah, you're welcome anytime. You know that.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I mean, anything's a better sight than this Trek I got over here. So, but no, this has been good, guys, and we've got some more cool guests coming up on the next episode of the Dead Pair Podcast, so make sure and tune in.